Hi, and welcome to Air Graphics Podcast. My name is Ralph Kelly, the owner of Air Graphics, airbrushing and caricatures. This is my third year podcasting on the Air Graphics Podcast, and our first guest is Pauly Kniffer of Pauly Chromatics.
Hi. Pauly?
Yep.
So we finally got it?
Got it. We finally got it.
Told y'all was serious this time. Can you hear me good?
Yep, I can hear you good.
All right. Let's get it rocking.
All right.
So where are you from?
I am from a little town called Webster, Iowa.
Webster, Iowa?
Midwest. Farm boy.
I thought you was from Omaha.
No, I live in Oregon.
Oregon.
Fell in love and I came out to Oregon.
How long you been there?
Since 05.
05?
05.
So, any websites or social media you want to promote?
You can find me on Facebook under the Pauly Chromatic Paint Show, and that is a play on my name, PAULYCHROMATIC. And that right now is unfortunately the only thing I have at the moment, and that's fine until I can get it all worked back up.
Yeah, so you don't have any, you don't do Instagram or TikTok?
I do Instagram under the same, the Pauly Chromatic Paint Show, and I do have a TikTok under the same name.
See, there we go.
There we go.
Yeah. So how long have you been airbrushing?
I started airbrushing in 89. I started painting in high school, but I didn't really get serious, and I didn't get into airbrushing until about 89.
Okay.
I was in... Well, I was taking commercial art in a community college, and a guy by the name of Dan Pals was teaching the class, and he got me into it. So I took a couple of semesters of that, along with printmaking and computer familiarization, typography, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
So are you self-taught, or it was like a class or something?
I took the class with Dan Pals in to familiarize myself with airbrush. But you know as well as anyone else that you don't learn anything until you experiment and you dive in. You got to play with it. And if you don't experiment and you don't toy with it, then you don't get into the idiosyncrasies of it. And there's a lot of give and take, and you've got to play with it. So self-learn, you bet. I am as self-taught as anyone else.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, how we all get different.
Yeah, yeah. What gun did you use?
I started out with the Pache VL3, which I recommend to anybody starting out, and if they've got a couple bucks, or if they're starting out with a higher budget, I would say the Eclipse, the Iwata Eclipse, bottom feed, the BCS. That is a universal bottom feed airbrush that I would suggest to anybody.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start with the sausages, the Paches,
mm-hmm.
or the Badger Vegas, or the Vegas.
Or the Vegas. And it used to be, you could have thrown the Omnis in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, which one did Badger have? it had a big black handle on it. Badger had their version of the VL3, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but
Millennium?
I'm sorry?
Was it a Millennium?
No, this was this had been back in the
Crescido.
in the yes, Crescendo, yes, you got it.
Man, I was like digging through the Rolodex trying to figure it out.
Yep. Oh no, I know them all. I just it takes me a while to remember which ones are which. My least favorite gun is the AB Turbo. I used to sell those, and we would sell the needles in a pack of 12. And out of those 12, you might have two that work correctly.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny because the AB Turbo is the most, it looks the closest to the original patent that we started out with. The original patent for the first commercial sold airbrush looks like the AB Turbo. And it works on a paddle wheel system. It has a small tray and everything is on miniature mode. But it is in a category unto itself. You have single feed, double feed, and then you have the turbo. So, but there are people out there that love them. Olivia Bernardinez absolutely loves the AB Turbo. She'll use Microns and other airbrushes, but she absolutely loves them. So they are, they're preferred. I mean, they're what do you call it? A preferred taste.
I've never heard of them. Are they what brand? What are they?
Pache AB Turbo.
Patchy?
Yep.
Never heard.
Now my favorite illustration gun is obviously, I mean, I love the Micron, and the Micron, if you don't have, $600 to spend on a Micron, then I always suggest trying to find yourself a $100 old school Pache, or no, excuse me, Iwata AB, HPB. The HPB is a the quarter ounce cup on the top feed, but it gives you a 2 millimeter. And that, how many guns do you know that can give you 2 millimeter line for less than 200 or less than $100?
Not that
If you
many.
can, if you can find the older ones.
That's probably be the hard thing trying to find one.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, nowadays. So did you work for somebody? Did you open a shop or what? Once you got into it?
When I started out, I've worked for other people more than I have myself. I've had a shop in a mall for about 5 years. I've done the flea markets for 5 years. I've been on the road by myself for 5 years. But I've worked for I've worked with quite a few other people. I think I've worked for about maybe five or six other people. And I don't mind that. I absolutely, as long as somebody is willing to work with me, I don't mind standing on my feet for like 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah, because I think when I first met you, you had a cart in the mall.
In 06, from 06 to 2012, no, 2011. From 06 to 2011, I had a cart and then I had a kiosk.
Yeah, that's when I remember you. You was already probably on your own, had your own little thing going.
Yep. And we were on the West Coast Airbrush Forum even before Facebook got popular.
Yeah, I think that was that's that what got WCA was Facebook. Social networking get popular.
and I joke because there's kind of a fraternity now of all the people that are still in touch from, you know, that far back.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are still still connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, throughout the other Abra sites now that we have on groups that they have throughout Facebook.
I'm still working with Rich Dilt.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to get to that towards the towards like the end, I guess closer to the end. I was going to talk to you about the
yeah.
you working with Rich.
Yeah. Cuz yeah. I've worked for along the along with, you know, myself, I've worked for Doug Burke, I've worked for Rich Diltz, I've worked for Bob Hollingsworth. I worked with him for 3 years, and then I did gigs for him for about 7. And he was a great person to know.
Yeah.
He went through everybody that kind of went through that, graduated, everybody that wanted to learn caricatures went to go to learn at Opryland, and they always had to go through Bob Hollingsworth, and that was such a great treat to learn how to do all that. It was grueling. It was a grueling way to learn caricatures in a theme park, but once you crawled your way out of the gutter and through the ranks, then yeah, it was a great experience.
Oh yeah. Learning in a theme park caricatures. I was thrown to the wolves when I did it. It was like, okay, you do this. All right. So you come to work tomorrow and you work a 6-hour shift. Like what? A little bit more than that? How do I exaggerate?
And it was so funny because I had a great teacher. I had a guy named, for caricatures, I had a guy named Tracy Latham. And he is an absolute, he's great at caricatures, but his true, the true testimony to him, to his character, is he makes tons of people, he can make anybody laugh. He is a great comedian. And you kind of have to do that when you're doing it. So
yeah, have to be us.
You have to make fun of somebody, insult them, draw them in less than 2 minutes, and make them laugh.
Yeah. But see, I've never been a big exaggerist. I don't exaggerate a lot.
I if I read the person as fun, then. And you can't do it every 100% of the time. You're going to read somebody wrong. But if you get some middle age, if you're at a corporate gig and it's a business, you know, business party meeting, whatever, business gig, and you get some middle-aged woman that says, I want to be on the back of a golf cart with a keg and a cigar, you get full license. That is a invitation to do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, it can be that way. I miss it, so I miss doing live. I said I was going to try to get back up doing lives, but
yep,
it is what it is at this point, I think.
It comes and goes and wanes, especially the caricatures. And in this economy, it is tough. Not everybody's parties are hard to do anyway, unless you are in a populated area.
Well, I'm in Houston, so there's always something going on here.
Yeah. And if you can do something that'll fit their budget, there's always a party, I'm sure.
Yeah. So to this date, how long have you think you've been airbrushing?
Off and on since 89, so that's long enough to get my nose wet.
Yeah, I think that's all.
I think I qualify for that. I've always been, especially on forums and stuff, I always have been in the shadows, and I don't mind that. But I've always had free information. I've always given, you know, I've always thrown out as much as possible. I don't think it, any of it should be. If you've got some years under your belt, then share it. I don't think it should be, held in.
I think now it's you probably could get information anywhere nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially YouTube or whatnot now.
No, there are some people out there. There's, I don't always agree with all of them, but most of it is pretty generic and pretty much the same. So,
yeah. But
off and on since '89. Yeah, I know I've got at least 20 good years nonstop, and probably what 32 years. Without, so I always say just long enough. I've done it long enough to get my nose wet.
Yeah, but you got a while to go too. You think?
Oh, you're always gonna learn something. So as long as I can, you bet. Till my hand falls off.
So. So you kept the same name the whole time, the Polychromatic, or you had a different name for your business?
I was under Airbrushed by Paul for the longest time. In fact, I had that from 06 to 2 years ago.
That's when you started doing the Smalleys?
I started doing the Smalleys in 2012. And there's a reason for why I did that. I was trying to get better at detail. And I figured if I can do it on a smaller basis, then I can utilize that when I'm doing bigger pieces.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked. But
so I don't like to do small intricate like that.
It takes patience and it takes a lot of, but I tell you, it's a bit of a parlor trick, but it helps you develop your eye when you get down that small. Because I was getting in the habit of trying to paint 1 inch by 2 inch. Mm. And if you can paint 1 inch by 2 inch, it sharpens that vision up. It doesn't exactly sharpen with speed. I mean, I wouldn't suggest doing that if you were trying to get into, airbrushing t-shirts and whatnot. But if you are, if you're just specifically trying to do, tighten up on texture or hair follicles or stuff like that, then it helps tighten that line quality and that small, that sense of size. And whatnot, and getting as much detail as you can in that square inch. And I'm not the smallest by any means.
It was a guy from, Airbrush, the other website. I think he used to paint on razor blades or something like that.
That would be Stephen Leahy. And he was the one I chased the most when doing that. He is the absolute king of getting down to small. He has the patience of a saint, and I can't say enough good things about him. He is completely transparent when he talks about, sharing tricks and stuff like that. But he is the absolute king for painting small.
Yeah, because I was like, is this going to be somebody who painted on like real many razor blades or whatnot?
Steve Leahy did a 32 Ford on a number 11 razor blade or X-Acto blade on a number 11. He did the headlight, the fender part of the tire, the hood, all that on a number 11. That to me is insane. And I paint 1 inch by 2 inch, or used to. I'll get back into doing that because that is a good way to get, jump back into it.
Yeah. And we'll probably talk about your studio that you just got going back up. So, yeah, we'll bring that up.
Yes! I am back up and running, kind of.
So what do you feel is your specialty?
I've done a lot of portraits. I've done a lot of dog portraits. Those paid a lot of bills. Over the last 10, you know, 5 or 6 years, I've done a lot of junkyard paintings, which I'm having a lot of fun with.
What are those?
I would go to junkyard salvage yards and get my reference photos from them. And these are just all vintage trucks, cars that are in disarray and different forms of atrophy and disarray and chipping paint and rust. And those who are what I get kind of got known for doing in the last bit. But I still do dog portraits. I still do portraits. And of course, then there's the bread and butter, the quick t-shirts, hats and whatnot. And
yeah,
there's still a market for that if you're quick. And therein lies the trick. You have to be quick.
Speed. Hey, the faster you paint, the more money you make. That's what they always say.
Yep. There it is. So as far as a specialty, I don't know, because I try to keep my fingers in, you know, different bowls.
So when you used to work at Walmart, where were you at?
When I was in Walmart, our primary locations were in Tennessee. We did Tennessee, but then when we did the traveling bit, we did, I tried to stay in states that had a one plate state, one license plate, because half of my business was the auto tags.
Yeah.
And I had quite a few basic designs that were either zigzag or splash or, you know, a stone look. And if I could keep to those, I mean, I had an instant where I did six tags in 15 minutes. And then you take them outside, you take them out to the parking lot, you clear coat them, you bring them back in, and voila. So.
Yeah, Texas is a two-tag state, but I still used to get people who used to come in and ask for tags.
Yeah. I mean, they can hang them in their garage. Hang them in their bathroom. I had people in Iowa that actually, Iowa's a two-plate state, but, you know, I went back to my home state and people would just get them just because. And I'm like, well, maybe I need to rethink what I'm doing. I need to rebrand them and resell them as something else.
Yeah. The window of the car.
Yep. Dashboard art.
Yeah.
There's always a market for something.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you can always use it for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, is there a lot of shops in your area, or are you like?
I am kind of in a desert. I am in a. They all want to be art oriented. But it is more, it's not illustrative art. It's more, what I want to call it, swanky art, outsider art, abstract. It's not illustrative art, which is where I settle in. So it's kind of weird. I can do my stuff as painterly as I want, you know, brush strokes and whatnot, but they people around here kind of look at it kind of funny. So I have to, I'm still learning my demographics here in my location where I'm at right now. And it's unfortunate the airbrush got this stereotype of, I don't want to say redneck, but it did get this kind of stereotype with fairs and stuff. So when you try and do something more art related with it, then they always bring it back to that, which is fine. I
But
mean,
it's so
that's just,
universal. It's so universal.
it's,
You can't. I mean,
yes, you're right. Exactly right. And you can, it's, and airbrush is simply just a tool. It's not even a medium. This morning, Creighton, my wife, was telling me, you know, it's a medium. And I'm like, but you can throw oil in it. I can use acrylic. I can use watercolor. I can use even bleach when I want to airbrush something on a shirt.
yeah, you actually
I
can.
can airbrush with bleach.
I think
I can
somebody does
airbrush.
do that with on black
I
shirts,
think
right?
there's, yeah, I think somebody does. I've seen people like what's his name? Cook up in Portland. He used to airbrush with coffee. He would get the darkest black coffee and airbrush with it. So it's this great tool, you know, when you talk about different art forms and different demographics in different areas that are more interested or more art in or orientated in one direction or another. And I've seen that in different places and different locations, because when I was on the road with Walmart, the first thing we would do is check out local art.
Yeah,
And
that's
art.
this one guy, was it Goddard, Goddard, who used to paint the olives. I think he started out as an airbrush artist.
In Las Vegas, yeah.
Yeah,
Godard, I think, was his last name, yeah. He
God,
does
he
strictly
had a few tails.
nothing but olives. What a niche. I love that.
Olives in all different. Doing all kinds of different things.
Yep. It's so funny. And I'm like, but yet, if you can make it painting olives, why would you have to paint anything else? I would get so
Dude.
bored. To me, I would get so bored doing olives. And there may be a point where I get bored doing like trucks and cars and whatnot, but there's so many different models that you can choose from. So, but you
It's
know,
looking good.
a 1962 Impala with, you know, solo cup taillights, and yeah, I love it. But and there's not that many car guys out there, but you know, there's a few out there, so there's a market for it somewhere.
So, but you basically do your cars off of
I
the
do my
images.
cars and I do a few gigs here and there. And that's where
Yeah.
I'm at right now.
So, do you have do you paint alone, or when you
Yep.
go to, or you have helpers?
When I do the gigs, usually I'll have a helper. And like I said, I'm right now working with Rich Diltz, and he will assign, depending on the gig. He will depend on quantity of clientele, depending on the duration, depending on what we're doing. He'll assign accordingly. You know, how many helpers per, and usually it works out beautifully. I don't think I've had a few gigs that were just like, you know, a little nerve-wracking, but that's just me getting back into it. But otherwise, it's he runs a great business, a great gig. His clienteles are usually always happy. So, but
That's cool.
and I'm always happy working with somebody else.
Yeah, I guess some people, it's easier because you don't have to worry about all of the extras that come with running the business.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And when I'm when I was working for myself, that was, yeah, there's a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of stuff to go through and inventory, always making sure you're keeping up with paint and whatnot. And for the most part, you want to still keep up your equipment and still keep up your inventory of paint and whatnot. When you're working for somebody else, usually they'll supply shirt and whatnot.
Yeah, you just have to show up.
Yep, you just got to show up with your equipment. Make sure you got your easel. Make sure that it kind of goes in the flow with what they are using. And that way there's a little bit of universal imagery there. So when the client hires another artist again and again, they know what to expect. And I think when I've seen people do gigs, the only thing I've seen is like variation and maybe the shirt boards, or usually they've got a lightweight easel. There is a new generation of guys that have flight cases now, and that houses their easel, their guns, all in the same thing. And I got really fascinated with that. I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember the guy's name. I don't have a link or anything like that to it, but, and I can get that for you later, but it is a flight case that you put on a table. You open it up, your guns pop out, they click onto the front of that flight case.
Pete Marion.
Everest is that Revenge. The guy's name?
Everest Revenge.
Yeah, that's him.
I think he modified.
It's a brilliant design.
Yeah, modified a toolbox or something like that.
Yep. And I've always kept my guns in a 24-inch toolbox, but that was just to keep them upright and safe and whatnot. And then I use the two bolts that keep them into the toolbox when I pull them out, that the same two bolts hook into the easel. And that was my nifty little traveling bit.
Yeah, my easels, my event easels, I try to keep everything contained, on wheels. Like box I have is like my compressors at the bottom and my guns and paints at the top. And it's just, I don't have to have that. I don't have to carry as much.
Another great design was from Jeff Jackson. He had that flip top.
Oh, I remember that. Like, I don't know. I didn't know. It was metal at first, wasn't it?
He's had different variations. I have no idea how many he's made of it, but they've always been pretty much the same design. It was slanted. If you cut a diagonal line in a box, your compressor was towards the back on the bottom. It kept things weighted. The front of it flips up and then clicks on the sides.
Yeah,
it turns hold it in place. I think one variation had a fan inside.
That looks like that would be heavy, though.
It would. It would. Especially depending on the compressor.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's now like, do you use California's? Because I think basically they're pretty much taking over California compressors.
California Air Tools, I have a 2 horsepower, 4.5 gallon. And it works excellent.
Yeah. And it's not very loud. It's not very loud either.
No. They're pretty quiet. I had one scare and I went and got a Husky 4 gallon, and it's quieter than the Husky. The Husky is pretty quiet and that's my backup. But the California Air Tools is pretty quiet. And if you get a California Air Tools, I cannot stress enough, get the 2 horsepower, not the 1. If you have it within your budget, get the 2 horsepower.
Yeah. The why is it what PSI you paint at? Does it come, what don't have a high enough PSI?
Okay. When I'm doing illustration, of course the harder the surface, the lower the PSI that I will take or airbrush at. Also, if, depending on the viscosity of the paint, the thicker the viscosity, the higher PSI I'll shoot at. For shirts that are, or sweatshirts, I'll shoot anywhere between 65 to 70 on the average, 70 PSI. If I am doing a hard surface, I'll shoot at about 50, like license plates, license tags, I'll shoot at 50 PSI. If I am shooting illustration on a board or on UPO, I will do it at about 25 PSI. And I think the lowest I've ever shot at was 7 PSI.
Oh, I would go bonkers. I paint at 80 PSI for everything.
The most, everything. And I think, let's see, LaValle, if you remember him, yeah, that did the True Fire, he did everything at 80 PSI. But I think the one that takes the cake is a guy named Krim. He was based out of Nashville, and he kept bringing, when I worked in an art store in Nashville, he kept bringing in these Pache hoses. And I'm like, why are you going through the hoses so much? He runs it at full blast. So if a compressor runs at 120 PSI, he ran at 120 PSI.
Damn.
I'm like, yeah, he was blowing hoses left and right.
He blowing hoses.
Whatever. And he was doing outdoor murals. That was okay. His justification. So
I guess yeah, it'll get your paint moving faster.
Yeah, I suppose. I can't paint it that high.
You have to be constantly moving too, because it'll puddle up quick.
Yeah. And there's some guys out there that will use like LaValle always used that, like when he did his lightning or even some of his flames, he would allow that paint to go out and spread out, and he would use that to his advantage. He knew how that paint would react on a hard surface, because his white would be fairly opaque and fairly high viscosity, but you can't run 80 PSI and stay around for too long. Uh-oh. And yeah, he would use that to his advantage to get that that flavor between transparency and opaque in the line, and just let it spread.
Mm.
But yeah, he was a fast painter.
Yeah,
Michael LaValle, that was his name.
So is it any other artists you would like to collab with?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. There's so many artists that I absolutely love. McCray, Sandra, oh God, what is her last name from Atlanta? Sandra
Goggins?
Yep. Love her work.
You know they got a show coming up.
Oh, do they? Nice.
Yeah, February.
Cool.
I said I was going to try to make it up there to February something in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Herbert Edwards are doing a show together.
Mm.
Have you ever thought about doing a show? Like a
the last show I was in was in Nashville in 2003. It was 02 or 03. I think it was an 02.
I think I would have a hard time coming up with content.
Oh, you would. No, you wouldn't have any hard time coming up with content. I did a skinny, long canvas with a dashboard, a really old dashboard. I did that in a portrait, and it was, there was quite a few artists in that show. So I wasn't the only one, but it was a fun show. It was a good
show. Now, for you, you honestly, with the, you know, you like to do those old cars. I think you would make a killing if you was to set up like at an old time road show.
I've done that a few times, and I've actually painted the t-shirts and had paintings up at car shows, and it's a mixed bag as far as, you know, what people like and what they don't. And I actually sold more shirts than I did the actual art. I sold a couple pieces here and there. For me, the hard part is getting the name, getting out and getting word of mouth and getting to where people get to know where you're at.
I think that's a generally everybody have that problem.
Yep. I think Chris Riley was talking about that one day. He's just, you know, getting your name out and whatnot. So it's tough, but it's not impossible.
I think it's consistency of being in one location can do it.
No, I haven't done that.
And I think online presence is the hardest to like really achieve.
Yeah. You have to be consistent. You have to put in. And I see these guys, you know, they'll either. And I've been accused of doing that too, is where I keep pumping out my old stuff. I keep showing old work and whatnot. Keep showing portraits and the small stuff and the cars and whatnot. It's hard to keep that presented and keep that in focus. But I know a lot of guys that will, you know, if they're not painting at the moment, then they'll put on older stuff. So, well, I'm not the only, I don't feel bad because I'm not the only one. But
no, well, I do it all the time. If I look on my memories, if I wake up the next morning, Facebook memories, and it's some stuff I like, I'll just repost it. I really don't post on the internet
anymore, though. I love memories because some of the work that I don't have, and I don't have physical work right now because of 2 years ago. And you know, I lost 30 some paintings, you know, from that. That was actual physical work. And I lost one of the pads, my older pad that had all my photos of my old, you know, all my older work. So when it comes up on memories, I grab onto it because that's my only copy of that. I feel bad, but that, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that was a tough deal.
Man, I bet. Do you have any hobbies outside of airbrushing?
I grew up playing guitar with my dad, and I held on to that. I play guitar quite a bit. I'll collect ukes when I can. I'm either playing ukulele or guitar when I'm not painting.
I
can joke about the chickens all you want.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. I see you post a lot of those videos of somebody playing guitar all the time.
If I find a performer that, you know, I think other people, oh yeah, I'm a big share on that.
So you want to, I know it was like you was having a rough time about the, it was 2 years ago that the big fire happened?
Yep. We lost everything in the Alameda fires in Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, those areas of Southern Oregon. It burned everything up. I think around 50,000 people. When they started out, they said 40,000 people were affected, disowned and whatnot. But then they think they finished out somewhere around 60,000 people.
That's wow, man.
And that fire was running at about 50 some plus miles per hour. Just that morning, we had 60 plus miles per hour winds. It was moving. Yeah, it was moving way fast.
Man.
It was just unreal. I was kind of hanging outside of the property, and we saw the smoke, but we see smoke all the time. We've had a 10-year drought, so every year we see smoke. So we didn't think anything of it, but just happened to be that, you load up willy-nilly and you think, well, I'll just grab this and I'll grab the rest of it later when I come back. That's fine. Because, one part of your brain is thinking that it's not going to do anything. And then, that you're just loading up. And the next thing you know, there's flames across the street and you're just trying to get out as fast as possible. But all my airbrushes, paint, we lost animals. We lost, it was a lot. So I come back and then there's this big pile, where the house used to be of ash and stuff. And I found my drafting table, found my easel. It was all just mangled.
The fire was
just that hot.
Yeah.
It melted the airbrushes completely.
Did y'all have the opportunity of getting anything out beforehand, or just didn't have no time to do anything?
It started out, silly stuff and stuff that we just, like the bikes I threw in the back. I had a cargo trailer. And we got bikes, we got some clothes, we got some canned goods, some non-perishable stuff. We threw that in a garbage bag, threw that in there. Threw some paperwork in there. But like she had a backpack that had medicine and her ID, and that got left. We just weren't thinking. We didn't have enough warning. We were just playing a guessing game the whole day.
Wow.
And we should have known better. And we do now. But,
Well, the good thing is that y'all made it out safe. And,
That was the thing.
I'm pretty sure it was like, I think listening to you or watching you or reading you, it wasn't as easy getting back started because there was a lot of games and whatnot with the contractors, or?
It's a lot of, I think between supply and demand, COVID, there's a lot of wait for supplies and stuff like that. Plus the contractors, it was just a waiting game. We ordered, our insurance was good, didn't cover everything, but it covered enough. And manufactured homes should take anywhere, they brag that they can do them in 6 months. Well, it took us 2 years and 3 months to get them in on the property and in place and put together. And there's still a lot of mistakes. There's still the trim around stuff there that needs to be remitered and whatnot. And I've got to go under the crawl space and put mortar on the underside of the skirting where the bricks are. So there's still a lot to do, but I just got fed up with contractors, and I'm not going to wait for them anymore.
Just gonna start doing it yourself.
I'm just going to do it myself, yeah. So,
Sometimes it's easier that way. I mean, but if they're paid to do the job, you know.
yeah, no, they mortared only like the guys that did the skirting, the brick skirting, only mortared the outside. They didn't expect me to go underneath and inspect anything. So, yeah, the skirting that is only mortared on the outside and not mortared on the inside.
Is it a problem getting you back out there to fix it?
Oh, I'm yeah, no, I don't count on them ever coming back out. Even if we've told them about it. We've made a fuss, and a squeaky wheel does not always get the grease. So it'll take me a little bit, but I'll get under there and I'll do it myself. So no
But
problem there.
yeah,
I can either fuss about it or I can just, do it.
that's me. I'll jump up and do it instead of just keep waiting and waiting and waiting on somebody else. Be at the mercy of somebody else is always a pain.
But
But I see you were rebuilding out your studio. You found a new desk and whatnot.
yep, I've been searching for an electric table for like 10 years, waiting for them to get into a price range where I could get them. And just by luck, I found one after the fires. So I put it in storage. Now I've got it in the room. I've got airbrushes replaced, and slowly kind of got everything back. I got my I use a lot of golden paint in the tubes. Got those back. I just ordered those from I just went ahead and just reordered them from I by the grace of whoever, I had my color list, so I was able to trace that and reorder from Golden from that. So, because I don't like straying from my old ways if I know it works. And the advantage I had when I was rebuilding and restarting is if you knew exactly what you wanted from experience, and you were starting out clean, what would you get? So, and that was the thing I was playing with. Because I don't have to do any experimentation on paint. I know what I like.
I think that's the
I
big
know
thing now is like, well, that's always been the big thing with like, well, you said com art or what is it? The illustration paint, right?
Oh, for illustration paint, I will use Golden.
Golden, that's right. But see, it's
Golden
like I
has
was
an ex.
about, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say about the, that's always been the test area of like the airbrush paints, the black, the white. You know,
Right.
who got the best black, who got the best white, the colors, the pigmentation.
And I was the thing I was getting on about was when you test a paint, the integrity of a paint, everybody uses black. Black is the strongest pigment out there. It's the most organic, it is the most common. It uses carbon. It's as pure as you're going to get. It doesn't take much carbon to make black, stand out. For me, it's the white. White is the weakest pigment. if you want to show me the quality of your paint on a blackboard, show me how white your white is. Because there's a thing called blue shift. And white on a blackboard, white on black paint always looks purple. So when you do a portrait on a black surface, so many people's portraits look dead. Why? Because the lips look purple. And if you can't get around that, you either have to tint your white into a pigment like titanium buff, something off white, and that way you can get around that. Or you need to find a white that actually works. But the other thing that I need is, if I'm doing t-shirts or tags one day or hats one day and I want to turn around and I want to do something illustrative, I need a white that's versatile. I need a white that flows well. I need a white that covers. I need a white that can do all that. But I can thin any black and make it, you know, fairly smooth, whether it's old, been sitting, or what.
So who do you use?
Right now, for illustration, I use Golden. I use E-Tac when I'm out doing gigs. Love E-Tac. Bill Edwards is such a great company. He is a great company. I love talking to Bill. He will talk you to death, though. He loves to talk. He has a great right-hand man in Marbot. In CJ or Chris. Yeah. Great people to work with. And they will bend over backwards to help you out. To get you the colors that you need. And I have...
Yeah. Bill was telling me that he got a... Bill said he got a new white. I've been wanting to try it out.
Yes, I haven't tried it yet, but I have a bottle. It is AG white, opaque white. And if it is like the other AG products, I have high hopes for it. It should be good.
Yeah, I'll talk one day about it.
But every once in a while, I will use an Aquaflow white. Out of Createx and all the other companies, Aquaflow has had some of the most consistency, the best consistency with white. Even they have their ups and downs. It's hard to keep a white in stock and to keep it under its standards, if that makes sense. Acrylic paints usually have something that where they have a carrier, a binder, and a pigment. The binder is for adhesion. The polymer carrier is usually your co-adhesion, and then your pigment is your color. And for white, that's a hard mix to keep. Usually what will happen is it will start to coagulate inside the bottle if it's not stored correctly. And a lot of stores, it's hard to go to a store and get, you know, paint in a pinch. Because they don't agitate the especially with airbrush, they don't agitate their colors on a, you know, regular basis. So that coagulation is... You're going from milk to cream until eventually you get this hardened shell, this gel.
So, that's basically what Createx is right now, just a gel.
I don't want to slander or diss a company like that, but I have had a lot of problems with Createx.
Man.
And the bigger the company that you are, the harder it is to keep your standards of quality, you know, your QA. So I don't know. I don't think I can go to the, you know, the heads up. I forget his name. Who's the head of Createx, but yeah, it's a bigger company, so it's harder to get to the people that you need.
Yeah, it's nowadays, it's like there's no, I don't know how I was going to put it. Never mind. Like you said, I don't want to get into it about it.
No, it's there is a lot of politics that go into it.
Yeah, I wasted a lot of money on that paint too, though. Do I have to throw away? Because it just ain't no good.
Yeah, I get it.
And there's no place to get a refund. Or replace all the paint.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
And I get it. I would not want to sell paint. There's just too much to go wrong with it.
Yeah. So you like working with Rich, like doing gigs?
Oh, I love doing gigs. I love going down there. Rich is good people. They make it so enjoyable to go down there and you know, you can build your speed up, you can build your and they're particular on the people that they have painting for them. You know, they look at the quality of the person. They also look at the quality of the work.
As they should, yeah, yeah. Because
you want good people, you know, working for you.
Yeah, because they represent you.
Exactly. Yep. And Rich is he's a fast painter. You know, you can think you're fast all you want until you get next to the person that, you know, that you're working with. And I've seen fast painters out there. Doug Burke's a fast painter. Gary Watts is a fast painter. But Rich Diltz is a fast painter.
Yeah.
And these are all good quality painters. Jeff Jackson is a very fast painter. Oh my gosh. He's incredible to watch.
Doing the events kind of helped you back into getting back to painting, because you were probably on hiatus for a while.
Oh yeah, that's it, definitely, because it's hard. If you haven't been painting, you know, on the regular, it's hard to get yourself to do it. And that's part of me is still in that mode, is it's hard to get yourself to paint, even if you're not painting for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get back into it. Especially
gotta get back into it.
Being live with people is like, you know, you're not taking an order and they walking away. Some of them are actually just standing there watching you, and you got to get past that nervousness.
Oh yeah, it's just. I remember my first gig, especially with Rich. Usually he'll want you to paint with him, so he can, you know, keep an eye on you and watch what you're doing and whatnot. And boy, that's a nerve wracking deal. Even if you're painting for a while, here I had, 30 years under my belt with an airbrush, and you're just nervous as hell.
Yeah.
But
it's like riding a bike.
Yep. It's like riding a bike. But just like a band in a casino, it's a good way to sharpen your skills and get you back to where you were.
Yeah. That's a good thing. Actually, I haven't done parties in forever, but I'm actually starting to get back into it myself. And it's,
If you have good, if you have good people taking the tickets or writing the tickets out, they can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it goes a lot easier too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what's the one thing about ad brushing that taught you that you think everyone should learn?
Dot, dagger, and shade. Do that dot. Go through the motions. Do it. Don't skimp. I see a lot of people that draw that line and they think, that's it. That's, I'm good. I'm good with that. And some self-taught people will do that. But you, when I taught in Nashville for 5 years and then I taught in OSP for two, Oregon State Penitentiary. And I will always do a six pack of paper towels. The first roll of paper towels is to do a dot and nothing but. The second roll of paper towels is to do dots again in a grid. And then connect those dots using daggers.
And oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yep. So move the dots and connect them. So once you get into doing the daggers, then do them in different directions. Sweep them up, sweep them down, sweep them over. Do palm trees. If you can do a palm tree, then everything else is gravy. So when you do script, break your letters up. Do a roll of paper towels with an alphabet. Yeah. Write the name Samantha 80 times. Until you get those dagger strokes down. Then on another roll of paper towels, draw a circle and then shadow it until you get a nice little sphere going. Do it again, do it again, do it again. Dagger, line, shade. Dagger, line, shade. Dot, dagger, line, shade. Dot, dagger, line, shade.
Yeah, I skipped that.
You still do it, though. You can still pull a dagger. I've seen you do it.
Yeah, I'm okay.
You do good. You do good.
Wow, well, I'm finally glad. I know we played, what you call it, podcast tag today?
I know it. Wasn't that, was a hoot, wasn't it?
I wanted to do it while I was at work because I was slow. But then things changed. And then I just ran out of time.
So, oh, like, man. In life.
I'll ride home. I'll call him and we can try to do it.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I'm pretty sure you thought I gave up on you, but I ain't give up. I got to figure out how to get Al on here, too, now.
Don't give up on me. Here's a question for you. West Coast airbrush artists versus East Coast. Do you see a style difference?
I think everybody have their own style.
Mm.
I think everybody's, some people try to mimic other people's artwork, but then
right.
you tend to build your, that's the same way with characters. I used to try to, you mimic, they teach you to mimic somebody, and then you'll eventually start to get in your own style. But I think everybody has their own style, but let's say for instance, the East Coast people are gonna, they're not gonna have the same, designs as the West Coast people. You know, it's like everybody want different stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess it's more popular West Coast artists than it is East Coast artists.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Craig Frazier them from West Coast?
Right. Then you got Coast Airbrush. Iwata, and they're all West Coast. So, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Well, all right, Paulie, I've took up an hour of your time. I appreciate it.
No worries, man. Thank you. And keep doing what you're doing with the podcast and keep showing us, you know, how to make some money out there at Airbrush. That's absolutely cool.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, man.
Have a great rest of your day, bro.
You too. Talk to you later.
Air Graphic Podcast is a production of Air Graphics Airbrushing. It's written and hosted by me, fellow airbrusher Ralph Kelly. If you want to see any of my work, check out my website, www.airgraphics1.com, or my Facebook, Ralph Kelly. Thanks for listening.